We're doing Rav Charlap on Parshat Ki Teitze. Our subject is Harshut VeHatzivui HaElyon. From above, sometimes we're told do this, and sometimes we're told you can do this. You're allowed, permitted, and sometimes commanded. How does that play itself out? And it will break down into four topics. Number one, what is the source of anything that's prohibited? Number two, how you can take something that's permitted and lift it up to being obligatory. Topic number three, the predefined evolvement of existence. Existence will ultimately evolve into being in sync with the desire or the commandments of above. And the final topic, how does honoring one's parents connect with the mitzvah of shooing away the mother bird? So those are the four topics we hope to get to if we keep the pedal to the metal. Okay, you chose a big one. So we'll begin. Chazal tell us that when Hashem gave us the permissibility of taking a beautiful woman at war, she's trying to seduce you, you're out at war. Torah says, you want to, you could take her, but after the month's process, you're going to have to decide if you really want to marry her, and I don't recommend it, but I'm not going to tell you no. So that's a new concept, it seems. Ordinarily, Torah says yes or no. Here the Torah says you could, it's not recommended, but okay. Explain our sages, lo dibra Torah ela keneged yetzer hara. The Torah was only speaking because it stood in opposition to our evil inclination, because the Torah was saying, I know that if I don't permit it to you, you'll take her anyways. There she is on the battlefield. She's trying to seduce you. If I don't give you a system that permits it to you, the Torah says, I know you'll marry her and you'll go against the Torah. But, says the Torah, if you marry her, I'm telling you, then you're going to hate her and you're going to have a son who's a rebellious son. That's the Medrash Tanhuma quoted in Rashi. So, when the Pasuk tells us, if a person has a rebellious son, so the Pasuk is telling us that even though this woman was from the nation that lost the battle, and this woman is not from our people, and you could have said that it's her fault that I had a rebellious son. A person could have said, well, she came from this nation with all their bad traits. When the Torah describes the rebellious son, the Torah doesn't say when you have a wife that gives you a son who's rebellious. What does the Torah say? Ki yiyeh le'ish ben sorer u'moreh. When the man has a son who's rebellious. So the Torah says you're going to try to cop out and say it's her fault. I know I shouldn't have married her, but it's because she is such a woman. Says the Torah, it's your son. And you were the one who allowed yourself to be seduced. You'll say, she was the seductor, says the Torah, but you were the one who said, I want to go after the seduction. So the Torah attributes this son to you. Torah says, you should know you're the one who fathered that rebellious son. It was your desires that brought you here. Hashem takes the whole story of the wife and the child and points a big finger at the man and says, it's you. And it all begins with your decision. You're the Jew, you're the man at war, you're the man who had responsibility to make the right choice, you made the wrong choice. Now you're going to blame the woman about the son. Says the Torah, no, you made the choice that led to that son. But we still have to understand, what does it mean that the Torah says, I know you have this tremendous desire, so I'm going to permit it. The Torah says it's prohibited, so now you're going to say, I'll permit what's prohibited because you have desire? The Torah came to give us a system that says this is how you should live. What does that mean? That the Torah says, here, I'll permit it to you. We would think that the essence is the exact opposite. Hashem says, I know what's good for you. That's why I tell you, don't do it. So here the Torah says, I know you have this tremendous desire. You could do it. It should be the other way around. You have tremendous desire. I'll tell you, don't do it because it's not good for you. And if you do it, okay, so then, look, you'll have the rebellious son, that you'll have a wife that you hate. That'll be the product of not listening to the Torah. Why over here does the Torah go the other route? Ordinarily, we assume the Torah tells us, I'll tell you what's good for you, don't do it. Shouldn't the Torah have told us, take your desires into control, don't do it? Shouldn't the Torah have just said, I know ultimately this will be a catastrophe for you and your family and the Jewish people, don't do it? What's this concept that the Torah says it's catastrophic, but I won't tell you no because you won't listen? What does that mean? Our sages said, when we view things that the Torah prohibits, don't say, I never wanted to eat pork anyways. I never wanted to go to Burger King anyways. I never wanted to go to McDonald's anyways. Says the Torah, that's not the approach you should take. You should say, I'd love to have a cheeseburger, but what can I do? The Torah said no. When it comes to mitzvot that are not within our logic, I don't know what's wrong with eating a cheeseburger. I don't know why a bird that's shechted this way is better than a bird that's just killed. I have no idea. Torah tells me I can't buy A and P meat. I have to go and buy the kosher meat. I don't know why. So about those mitzvot, says the Torah, a person should say, I'd be very happy if I could, but the Torah said no. So why am I not doing all those things I desire? Because God said so. Would you say, I'm so holy, I'm not even interested in eating a cheeseburger? No. Talmud says that's not the approach. So when it comes to things that are prohibited, what's stopping me is, God said no. That's what's stopping me. Now, what about the things that are permitted? So there, why can I eat this? Why can I eat the kosher meat? Because God said I'm allowed to. It's not because I want to, because I want what's prohibited too. So my desire is not what makes something neither permitted nor prohibited. My desire is a constant. I want everything. What makes it either permitted or prohibited is because God said, this you can, and this you can't. That's what makes it so. So, if Hashem would tell me, don't drink that coffee. Okay, done, I can't drink the coffee. And you know what? That's the easiest thing. You know, you're on a diet, and suddenly you have a piece of a hot dog, and then they bring in delicious lasagna, and everyone's eating it, and you're like, I can't. I don't know, how many times do people walk into here and we have pizza on a Thursday night and guys say, I just had meat. I can't touch that. So am I salivating for the pizza? No, I just had meat. It's not relevant. I can't eat it. It's not relevant to me. So if we would view what's permitted with that viewpoint, then we wouldn't end up in the wrong place.
I don't understand what you mean by that, because if we're viewing something as not permitted as something that's prohibited, how does it make it any different than if it's prohibited from the beginning?
We'll start again.
Because the pizza to someone who ate meat is prohibited, but it doesn't bother him. Why then are we talking about the a woman in that?
Wait, we're not yet up to the woman. Step. He's saying, I how do I view... Where does my viewpoint begin? I used to walk by a pork shop every day on my way to yeshiva. I used to walk by Rabbi Feinstein, three buildings down from his yeshiva, is a Chinese restaurant where you'd see the pork hanging, being roasted in the window. And it would fill up the smell from almost from the time I left the apartment till the time I got the yeshiva, I'd smell the pork. And it would make me want to vomit. And I often asked myself, why? Why is it that if I smell a kosher barbecue, I salivate? And I smell pork roasting and I could throw up? Because I have zero desire to eat pork. Zero. I look at it and it's vile to me. So I say to myself, why is it vile to me? It's not, there's nothing wrong with it. There were many times that I'd walk by and I'd ask myself, why can't I enjoy that smell? Why do I have to suffer from that smell? Why do I have to smell that and say, yuck, that's pork? Why? And I couldn't overcome it. Because from the time I don't even know myself yet, it's clear to me that pork isn't something that the Torah permits me to eat. So it's vile to me. So there are things that the Torah defined it, and that's it. It doesn't exist. It's not relevant. I never walked by, and I would challenge myself. I'm telling you some personal conversations I had in my walk. I'd ask myself, do I even have a Yetzer Hara for that? No. If you'd pay me to eat it, I have zero interest. I'm not interested. Says Rav Charlap, if we could look at all of life that way, if our questions began with the question of, does the Torah permit it or prohibit it? If that was the first question before the question of, do I want it? Then I wouldn't have problems. The problem begins when I ask, I want. If I'm very focused on what I want, and only then I look at, well, what does the Torah say about it? Then I run into problems. Because my thought process began with me. If my thought process begins with, is this within my realm or not? I would take this another step. The Ibn Ezra says, how could the Torah tell you not to desire your neighbor's wife? What do you mean? She's gorgeous. How could I not desire her? Says the Ibn Ezra, if you decide in your mind, Torah said that is off limits. If you can really come to a whole conclusion in your heart, that's not happening, then you won't desire your neighbor's wife. When the Torah says don't desire, what the Torah is saying is come to such a conclusion that that's off limits, then there's no desire. There's nothing to talk about. Proof of it is, you never see a person salivating over a dead woman. The only time he's going to be salivating is if he thinks that something might happen of it. So when you know something is off limits, when you know that's never going to happen, you don't sit there going crazy over it. Coming back to here. The key point here is, where's my starting point? Do I begin by saying, is that within limits or not? When a person decides in his mind that's never happening, there's nothing to talk about, then he doesn't have desire for it. It's just, it doesn't exist in his concepts. The problem is that he's looking and he's thinking, maybe I'm going to do it. When you start thinking, maybe I'm going to do it, that's when desire takes hold. If within my thought process I'm thinking it might happen, then I've already said, God, I'm not asking you. Oh, I might listen to you, but I'm first fantasizing what I want. This is a phenomenal point. What Rav Charlap just told us is key to all mitzvot. So really, the Torah didn't have to tell you the beautiful woman is prohibited at all.
Because you're not supposed to want it.
Wait. In an ideal world, if the Torah would have said no, I'm not interested in her beauty. If the Torah says yes, then I'm allowed to be interested in her beauty. In an ideal world, that's the whole question. Is she off limits or on limits? The permissibility of the woman should not have come from the man's desire. It should be that Hashem says, I don't prohibit it because I know that you won't stand up to your desire. And so, it sounds like circular reasoning, but you guys all have questions, so we'll get back to it in a second. Yes?
Your example, if it really was true that someone is on such a level that there is no temptation, what are we doing here on this earth? In other words, your example of pork, very different. Like if I smell bacon frying or something, I'm not going to eat it, but I will start sometimes. or the example of, I won't mention it, but like the name of one of the presidential candidates who said, if she wasn't my daughter, I'd date her. We cringe at that because he, like a bias, says, don't leave me in the room alone with my daughter-in-law. In other words, all of these desires are potentially rooted in us. If somebody's at a high enough level, and thanks to your parents and grounding and this and that, in this particular area, just the fact that the Torah says no takes it out of the realm of even desire, not less action. I wouldn't know what we would be doing on this earth if we never had to overcome our desires, if we were so hardwired,
No, but that's a personal work. That's a constant work. But that's constant work. It's a work on a different level, though.
But you said there was no personal work.
Right. I never had a yetzer hara for pork, but there are so many other areas that you have to work to develop that perspective.
This is going back with the line we were talking about. Hopefully it's not from severe suffering.
So
but hopefully that work is right what we're here for.
But I'm saying, but the work isn't I won't eat it, I will eat it. I won't eat it, I will eat it. The Rav Chalap is saying work on a different level.
You say it all the time. You might not eat it, but surround yourself with your reality. In a certain community. Don't go for the biggest house. Go for the Torah notes. We know that it's always possible. The Kohen Gadol lived to 55
years. Yes, but again, our work, says Rav Chalap, you could work on, I won't do it. I won't look at my neighbor's wife. You could work on that level. Says Rav Chalap, work on a different level.
Right.
Work on a level of... The Ribon Shom said there's nothing to talk about.
Okay.
He's saying that's the root.
I think that's great advice, but at least for me, I'm not ready to say I'm beyond that other level of need work also.
Okay. Say that.
Because you mentioned two different kinds of thinking. There was... The kosher example, right, where you don't not eat it because it's not whatever, but I'm saying they seem contradicting.
How so?
One is saying I want it, but the Torah says no.
Right.
And the other one says there's nothing to talk about. I'm not even going to look at it.
Right. Right. Okay.
Do they contradict?
In a minute. He doesn't spell it out, so I'm a little bit apprehensive about saying it, but I think what he means to say is that as a human being, I can potentially desire everything. I shouldn't say, I'm not interested in pork. From my own volition, I don't want pork.
That's
I should
strong, isn't it?
Just 1 second. He's saying, the Torah said no. But he's taking it the next step, meaning we would have read the Gemara to mean, I'd love to have pork, but the Torah said no. That's how we read the Gemara. Rav Chalap says, no. You should say, I would love to have pork. The Torah said no, and therefore I wouldn't love to have pork. Meaning, it's that after the Torah said no, I'm not sitting here with a constant battle. I recognize that I am a person who could salivate over pork and I could enjoy a million things, but now that the Torah said no, I'm not sitting here thinking I'd love to have pork. But I've worked to a point where if Hashem said no, there's nothing to talk about.
It's like a short circuit. You can embed this, then you've now preemptively overcome this.
Speak to your neshama, not to your body. If you can do short circuit the body. Because your neshama knows you want to do what the Torah says only. Forget the bodies.
Yeah, no, but there's, you know, I'll give you, again, a personal example. I about 5 years ago, I was Purim with a group of guys in a different yeshiva. And the guys decided they're going to trick me. And they gave me one to drink. And I said no. But then they said, just drink a little of this, a little of that. And suddenly I found myself not where I wanted to be on Purim. So I wasn't drunk, but I wasn't as sober as I wanted to be. So they said, Rabbi, drink this, it'll help you out. I said, what is this? They said, it's an energy drink. I said, what's that? They said, you'll feel better after you drink it. I drank one. I said, that's great, amazing. I went and got another one. I drank like three, and then I went home, and I was so amazed. And now, over the course of the next year, I got fully addicted to energy drinks, not realizing that they were addictive or bad for your health. And then one day, I discovered they were horrible for your health. They could cause people to have diabetes. They cause your heart rate. A million reasons why they're terrible. And I was blown away. I said, what? This is poison? I didn't know I was drinking poison all this time. And once it clicked, they're killing me with this. I don't think I drank another three cans of that. Oh, I saved, on Shavuos night. I have to stay up and learn. Okay, I don't think one's going to kill me. But suddenly it wasn't hard to stay away from drinking it. The whole year I hadn't realized I was getting addicted. I figured I like this drink, I like the flavor, what's wrong with it? Right? And then suddenly, once I realized I was poisoning myself, I thought, what am I, crazy? Why should I poison myself? Suddenly it wasn't hard to stay away. So if I can connect to the idea that when Hashem says, no, I'm poisoning myself, it's not hard to stay away. Our hardships are that we ignore it. We like to think everything's going to be okay. It's not such a big deal. And everything comes back to the basic point of how connected am I to the concept Hashem created the world and told me what to do. And I'm going to do what He said. And the more I can connect to that basic concept, so then the more everything I do is going to be that. That's why the Rambam writes, Kiddush Hashem is, I'm sitting in the room, no one's looking, no one's going to know what I looked at on the internet, it's not recorded, I'm incognito, and I say I'm not doing it because God said no. And when I do that, that second I've just boosted myself up, because suddenly I've connected on a much deeper level to the mitzvot. It has nothing to do with anyone else. This is what Hashem said. This is my life, and this is what I'm going to do. Ah, but like the Ran discussed, we have contradictions. We live with contradictions. You ask me today when I'm sitting in the class, of course I won't do it. Of course I shouldn't do it. You ask me a different time when I'm sitting with the temptation. Suddenly, do I deny what I said an hour ago? I don't deny it, but I'm forgetting it. I'm in a different place. Says Rav Charlap, We want to develop the first stage of defense. Torah said, no, it's off limits. And then my desire shouldn't kick in. It's not, I don't want it. I do, I would. But now that the Torah said no, that's where I think Rav Chalap is adding a point. He doesn't spell it out. He's adding a point to the Gemara. And now that the Torah said no, I don't want it. See, that he doesn't spell out, but I think that's what he means. He says, our desire is dependent on whether the Torah said yes or no.
So then how is it? That's your logic before. I think it's disgusting. I grew up with the idea of it being disgusting. So it's disgusting. But not that, you hear what I'm saying? When you were walking by the pork, you didn't say I'm salivating. You're saying I grew up that it was gross, that pork was gross. So I don't salivate over pork. But is it, you see what I'm saying? Is it that?
That's not, I didn't mean it as a direct analogy. I'm saying you can bring yourself to a point where there are certain things that are just not relevant.
You just give me an example. I wasn't saying that was like,
I'm not saying that's the ideal, right? I'm just saying, I've seen that in myself. Where I challenged myself. I said, can you not be disgusted? Can you not walk by it and feel like you're going to vomit from the smell? And I couldn't. So there are points where it's just not a part of me. Says Rav Chalap, you want to bring all of mitzvos to that point. Hashem said, no, it's just not relevant. That's not possible. Hashem said, no.
There's also a good kosher deli.
It's not close to it, no.
Not close to the show, but
good driver.
So again, Hashem says over here in this mitzvah, I know that you will not function with this system. Ordinarily, the system has to be, is it mutar or asur? I desire or I don't desire. It's asur, there's nothing to talk about, I don't desire it. But when it comes to a woman on the battlefield that's trying to seduce you, what the Torah is saying, I know you will not work with the values you should be working. Meaning, if in other areas I say you can't eat meat with milk, so then you're going to control your desires. You're not going to sit there salivating and say, I want a cheeseburger. You're going to say, it's off limits. I don't want it. I would want it. But once the Torah said no, so no. But that's not going to work with her. So that's what the Torah means. I opposite the Yetzer Hara, the Torah permitted it. What the Torah was saying is, over here, because your thought process is not going to be the pure thought process. So it's going to be a reverse system. Ordinarily, Hashem says, when I say no, then you decide I'm not going to think about it. It's not going to be in my realm of desires. Here, Hashem says, even though I'm going to say no, that's not what's going to happen. Now, it's not only about Eshet Yefatah. It's telling us a general rule that whenever I approach something that the Torah permitted, so then my approach should be, Torah permitted it, so I enjoy it. This is also liberating. It sounds constricting, but it's also liberating. I'll give you an example. Let's say there was a question whether something was kosher. And then the rabbis came out and said, it's perfectly kosher, no problem. So you come to eat it and you say, it doesn't feel kosher. I don't want to eat it. I'm not sure if it's kosher. But wait a second. If the rabbi said it's kosher, what are you worried about? They said it's perfectly okay. There's no problem with it. So, but that's okay. So when I work with the system that says I would want a lot of things, but when the Torah says it's okay, then I allow myself to desire it and enjoy it. And when the Torah says no, then that's it. It's off limits to me. I'm not going to sit here salivating over it. But then the things that the Torah said are mutar, go enjoy. You know, it's also liberating in the sense that I'm allowed to enjoy. If this is my system, then where I'm allowed to enjoy, go enjoy. Yes?
I was in Shiur this week. We're studying this passage, and the guy was giving the Shiur asked the question, is the Torah saying that this is an ideal? Just based on the text, like we're going through like Shad, Drash, and all the levels, and saying basically, if you look at this, what do you think, just looking at the text? In the end of the section, it says, if you don't marry her, you should let her go because you've already made her suffer, which implies, just based on the text, that like it's not necessarily an ideal.
Very nice.
So, based on that, and how does that relate to what we're saying about it being permissible, so therefore, yes, I should want to do it, and I should do it. It's almost like I should do it if it's available to me, is kind of what...
But Eshet Yefatah or not... Meaning, Eshet Yefatah is an example of where Hashem says, if you would listen to me, if you would work with the system I told you, that before you think, do I want, you think, does God permit? And then you decide to, whether to let your desires charge forward. My problem, Hashem says, is you're not going to work that way. And that's why Hashem says, I'm not going to tell you no, because you've broken the whole system. So I'm going to let you do it. I'm not going to say no. But it's not that I'm recommending it or commanding it. It's that I'm saying, I realize that here there's a challenge to the system that I recommend not doing it, but I'm not going to say no.
So it's consistent with what I just said?
Yeah.
Okay, I guess I didn't understand the first time then.
No, it's completely in line with what you said, yeah. Yeah.
We haven't gotten there yet. Here, where they say why this particular example is outside the system, I think we'll get there. I could guess, but I could be wrong. But you mentioned, you know, this was very different than, let's say, the case of the Midianite women that were seducing the women. This, seducing the Israelite men. This sounds like a case where clearly the woman is not seducing the guy.
No, they were.
Well, she cried for her parents. She's, you know,
that's during the month at home.
Yeah,
but out on the battlefield, they were seducing.
Normally on the battlefield, I mean, you know, Jews are famous, thank God, for not raping. The Arabs sent their women out in 67 with the red, with the white flag. She wouldn't do it in any other army, because generally Jews are not known to rape. But in this case, from that, I don't know where it says so, but if you say it says that too, I wouldn't have thought by reading the story that this woman was seducing the soldier. I was thinking,
yeah. You know, that's what it says, that they were out there, they figured, why should I go into captivity?
Right.
They'd get all dressed up
right.
And come out in seductive form.
If it's like after the war, it's the occupation army, and they want to eat better and this and that. I mean, that certainly happens all the time. You know, Europe and this and that. Okay. All right, that's a little different.
A technical question. You were saying that, well, God made a system, and that given our nature, we wouldn't listen to this part of his system.
but God also created our nature in the way that we wouldn't listen to a system in this way.
I could answer, but it's not Rav Chalab.
Okay.
Okay, you want me to go there? Okay, Reuven catches his son stealing. So he says, "Son, why are you stealing?" He says, "Dad, I want to buy a popsicle stick." So he says, "Okay, I'll tell you what. Every day you take out the garbage, I would rather you spend the time learning Torah and doing mitzvot. But any time you feel like you need money to go buy yourself a popsicle stick, you could take out the garbage in the kitchen, and I'll give you 5 shekel for every time you take out the garbage. But I'll tell you the truth, I'd much rather you you don't waste your time running around eating popsicle sticks. It's not good for your teeth, it's not good for your health, it's not good for your time, but I'm giving you an out." Is it possible that by giving him the out, now the child won't steal and also won't take out, won't be buying popsicle sticks every day? Sometimes by making something permitted and saying, "I don't recommend it, but I'm not going to tell you no," you're giving the person a greater tool to stand up to their desire.
Because you're giving them that choice?
Yeah.
That wasn't, I was...
Sometimes saying no is much more challenging.
My question was coming from, this is a story where the Torah says don't steal, and or that's it, and most people don't steal. But I'm saying this is, if it's in the Torah, that means, I guess at some point, like we were talking about yesterday with the Malich, I mean, it must be hardwired in our system to some degree. So he's saying, you know, Rav Chalap is saying that, well, I have to make it different because of your nature and the way you are. But just like the Malich, well, that's, God put that there.
Right.
So it seems like...
Is it impossible to overcome?
No.
Okay.
And the Irmi Klat is, right? Someone who kills B'shogeg.
Thursday night. Let's try to... Yeah.
So basically what you're saying is when you sometimes give the person the responsibility on themselves, they like step up to the challenge.
Sure. Sure. My kids once told me, "Abba, when you limit our sweet drinks, we want them more. When you tell us we could drink as much sweet drinks as we want, we rarely take more than one cup." I don't believe them, but that's what they say. I don't know. I never had the ability to follow in a meal whether it's true, but that's what they said. Okay. There's truth to the logic. Reality, I don't know. I don't know.
That's very, very big news. I know it should work on me.
There's so much here I want to do. Okay, we'll go in order. We basically finished topic number one. And later on, we'll see if we can connect the topics. Should we skip or should we continue in order? Because I'm very curious about what he's going to say about Kibud Av V'Aim. No. We have to go in order. It's hard because everything's built on everything else. Okay. The prime difference between whether a person's commanded to do something or not is as follows. We say everything that we recognize ultimately in the physical world passes from the world. It's not only because that was Hashem's intent in creating the physical world, but also so that we realize that everything else had a creator. You shouldn't think this came to be on its own. No, everything we know is finite, and that helps us recognize that everything was created by the infinite. The angels looked at Adam and they wanted to give him praise. They said, "He's so godly, he must be God." And so then God made Adam fall asleep, and the Medrash says then the angels recognized, "Oh, he's not God." So the angels, the Medrash is telling us there was room to think that man is God. And then you see man needs to rest. And that allows you to understand that man is not God. So our being finite is not only part of how we are created, it's also so that we recognize that we are the creation of the infinite. So creation is described as Tekiah and Shvarim. Tekiah is the straight blast, all of creation. You see, it's here. It represents something that seems fluid, smooth. We wake up in the morning. We assume tomorrow we're going to wake up in the morning. I'm healthy, I'm vibrant, I can deal, I can see. Oh, I'm great. Then you have the Shvarim. Suddenly life becomes choppy. It's not one straight voice. Boom, 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 boom. I'm not so smooth. I don't know if my health is smooth. I don't know if my life is smooth. I don't know what tomorrow will bring. So all of life is described as you're given smoothness. You're given the facade of as though everything is infinite. Everything is a constant. And then you're forced to face reality that no, there are breaks in that smoothness, and you don't know. You have to go to sleep at night. You cannot continue straight. So everything in creation has that duality. On the one hand, right now it's here, it has a certain importance. On the other hand, ultimately it won't be here. It's not infinite. So everything in creation can be ruined. Everything has the capacity to be destroyed. So whatever Hashem created in the world, He also created its nemesis. If there were things that people thought that there was no way to destroy them, so science finds ways to show you could destroy them. And so today we realize there's nothing you can't destroy. They thought matter is a constant, so then you discover no. Matter can be changed into energy, and energy is then wasted, and then the matter disappears, right? You can reach a point where everything can be destroyed. So then we are brought to the realization that what gives life is not within our realm. There's the infinite that gives life to us finite. The fact that things are finite keeps reminding us that there's something infinite that creates the finite. We're in this closed structure in a world where everything's finite, everything has an end, but then the infinite gives life to the finite world. So that's true in the physical world, and that's also true in the world of Torah and Mitzvot. If we... In the physical world, everything you see is finite. And that helps us recognize that the infinite created the finite world. Nothing in the world is infinite. The recognition that nothing in the world is infinite, even Adam has to go to sleep, nothing in the world is infinite gives us a recognition that everything gets its strength from something else. Because nothing can say, I was always here, I will always be here. Nope. So then there's a creator who is infinite, but I'm not.
Is that where the idea of idols come in? That they don't like...
Let's try to finish this. We're really out of time. If we look at Torah and we say Torah and Mitzvot are their own entity, so then it's like saying that the worlds are their own entity. The world exists. So there has to be an antithesis to that. Just like in the physical world, we keep getting reminded that the physical world isn't infinite. That's also true in Torah. So, where do we find that Torah is not its own entity? It's a creation of Hashem. Because we find there are forces that act against Torah. Suddenly you find that it's not easy to keep Torah and mitzvot. Torah and mitzvot, when you think they're their own entities, so suddenly you find there are many hindrances to keeping Torah and mitzvot. But when a person says, when I'm doing Torah and mitzvot, I'm doing what Hashem told me to do, so then everything points back to life coming from there. So then there's the holiness of Torah and mitzvot, And Hashem says, I'm going to be supportive. And you'll find that things will have a support from above. But we're not yet. He's in the middle of a thought and we're out of time. So we have to find time to finish this. Because he's working into where do we have this concept that the Torah says, I'm not forcing you, but I will permit you. Meaning if Torah is about the revelation of the will of Hashem, where in the will of Hashem is there room for your choice? I'm not telling you if yes or no. And that will bring us back to the woman where the Torah said, your choice. And that's the direction we're headed. We're out of time. If you guys choose, tell me.